This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Stephanie Roller Bruner? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Stephanie Roller Bruner was born in Mesa County, Colorado, in 1969. In 1993, she met a man named Dale Bruner at a national forest in Oregon. Dale was a nature photographer who worked in the forest. The couple dated for 3 years before getting married. They settled in Silverthorne, Colorado. Dale worked as a photographer, and Stephanie worked for the county. The couple would go on to have 3 children. By 2010, Stephanie had been laid off from her job with the county, and Dale's photography business had slowed down. The couple's money supply was low, and tensions were high. Stephanie found part-time work teaching people how to dance. It's not clear if this was actually a paid position. She became involved in a competition modeled after the TV show Dancing with the Stars called Dancing with the Mountain Stars. It was just like the original, except with a mountain and without any stars. Stephanie was a dance instructor in the competition and paired with a partner named Ron Holthaus. Ron was a physical therapist who was married to a woman named Cynthia. Stephanie and Ron started having an emotional affair sometime around September 2010. At one point, they kissed, but that was the extent of their physical relationship. The couple believed that they were soulmates and were destined to be together. The relationship between Stephanie and Dale continued to be strained. In early October 2010, Dale allegedly physically attacked his son. Stephanie filed for a restraining order and claimed that Dale had threatened to kill her if she ever left him. He allegedly made this threat years earlier. Stephanie and Dale separated, but Stephanie withdrew the restraining order. Dale moved back into the residence. Stephanie filed for divorce on November 1, apparently believing that she was going to be with Ron at some point in the near future. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On November 20, 2010, 19 days after filing for divorce, Stephanie moved out of the house she shared with Dale and took her children with her. She and the children moved back a few hours later. On the next day, November 21, Stephanie's emotional affair partner, Ron, told her that he wasn't going to leave his wife, Cynthia. Instead, they were going to try to work things out. So Ron wanted to stay with his wife. For some reason, despite making this proclamation that the emotional affair was over, Ron agreed to meet with Stephanie in a parking lot on Monday, November 22. They met sometime around 5 p.m. and talked for a while. Perhaps Ron was having second thoughts. Several hours later, Stephanie wrote an email using her computer. It was addressed to Ron. Stephanie agreed to meet him on Friday. She told Ron that she loved him so much and that he was the love of her life. Ron would never receive this email from Stephanie because she never sent it. It was almost like she was interrupted as she was writing it. Stephanie would never be heard from again. On November 23, 2010, at about 8:45 a.m., Dale notified the authorities and reported Stephanie missing. He claimed that they had an argument the night before, and Stephanie went for a walk sometime between 10 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. At this time, it was snowing outside. Dale said that Stephanie was only wearing a light jacket. She did not have her car keys, money, or her purse. However, she did have her cell phone and her laptop computer. Taking a phone is not surprising, but it doesn't make sense that she would take a laptop computer out into a snowstorm. A search effort was initiated. Investigators found it unusual that Dale did not participate in the search. He would later say that he thought the police would take care of the searching. Stephanie's body was recovered 3 days later, on November 26, in the Blue River. All her clothing was missing except for a shirt wrapped around her right arm. Stephanie died from a combination of drowning, hypothermia, blunt force trauma, and strangulation. The police looked into three potential suspects: Stephanie's husband, Dale, Stephanie's lover, Ron, and Ron's wife, Cynthia. None of them had a good alibi. Dale was alone. Ron said that he was at home with Cynthia, and Cynthia said that she was at home with Ron. The police decided to clear Ron and Cynthia as potential suspects and focus their attention on Dale. They believed Dale's alleged history of violence made him a good suspect. Dale was arrested for murder in July of 2011. He was offered a plea deal. He could plead guilty and receive only 24 years in prison. Dale turned down the offer and went to trial. In July of 2012, Dale Bruner was convicted of second-degree murder, 2 counts of first-degree assault, and 3 counts of tampering with evidence. He received 112 years in prison, but the sentence was later reduced on appeal to 48 years. Dale will be eligible for parole in 2045 when he is 83 years old. Dale continues to maintain his innocence, arguing that the police never seriously looked at any other potential suspects. Now moving to my analysis. Was Dale Bruner actually guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. The marriage between Dale and Stephanie allegedly involved violence perpetrated by Dale. Stephanie said that Dale had threatened her several years earlier and had physically attacked their son in October of 2010.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
Stephanie told a friend of hers that if anything happened to her, Dale was the one who did it. Stephanie and Dale were in the process of getting divorced, and Stephanie was having an emotional affair. Both of these items gave Dale a motive to commit murder. A woman who dated Dale in the early 1990s claimed that he would become violent during arguments. On one occasion, he strangled her to the point of unconsciousness. Another woman who dated Dale came forward with a similar story. Dale was the last person to see Stephanie alive. He claimed that she went missing late at night, but he didn't bother to report her missing until the next morning, about 10 hours later. He said that his wife walked into a snowstorm with a cell phone and a laptop computer. After Stephanie went missing, but before her body was found, Dale complained to people about how bad his wife was, like how she didn't take care of things around the house. Evidently, Dale did not understand the concept of bad timing. Moving to the last inculpatory item, this one was not heard by the jury. Dale later complained about the performance of his defense attorney, which allowed his lawyer to reveal confidential conversations. Dale's lawyer said that in May of 2020, Dale confessed to the murder. Dale said that he strangled Stephanie into unconsciousness, drove her to the river, threw her in, and hit her with a rock after she regained consciousness. Moving to the exculpatory factors, there were no witnesses to the murder, no video, no physical evidence tied Dale to the murder of his wife. Stephanie's emotional affair may have given Dale a motive to commit murder, but it also gave two other people a motive, Stephanie's lover Ron and Ron's wife Cynthia. Amidst the accusation, the attached twosome attempted to affirm one another's activities to achieve airtight alibis. This was essentially worthless under the circumstances. Of course, they were going to protect each other regardless of what they did or did not do. Stephanie and Ron had a simplistic and overly sentimental understanding of romance. They were disoriented and confused by the power of their love. Emotional states like this can lead to violence and other extreme behavior. Cynthia claimed that she found out about the affair after Stephanie went missing. Perhaps Cynthia was consumed with rage. She made it pretty clear to the police that she was mad at Ron. It stands to reason that she would also be angry with Stephanie. The accusations that Stephanie made against Dale were not well supported by evidence. One accusation was from several years ago. It seems like odd timing that one old threat suddenly became critical for Stephanie. It did not break up their marriage years ago, but out of nowhere, she was concerned about it. One could argue that Stephanie was trying to find a reason to paint Dale as violent because she wanted to get divorced to be with her lover. She was trying to justify switching partners. Stephanie had been lying to Dale about her emotional affair. It makes sense that she was lying about other areas as well. The two women who came forward and said that Dale had been violent in the past never reported his behavior to the police. When weighing all the evidence, do I think that Dale Bruner was guilty of murder? Well, his confession to his attorney was pretty damaging. I think it's pretty clear that Dale is guilty in reality, but that wasn't introduced at his trial. His dispute over his attorney's performance came later. Just based on what was available during the trial, I would not have been convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that Dale committed murder. The problem with the state's case is that Stephanie's emotional affair supplied three people with a motive to kill her. Moving to the last question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Stephanie and Dale had a relationship which was cold and distant. They did not provide well for each other's emotional needs. Dale had been threatening at times, and he had the potential for extreme violence when he was angry. This is consistent with what his other lovers said about him. Stephanie had some fear of Dale, but she did not truly believe he was dangerous. She had become attracted to her dance partner, Ron, after spending a lot of time with him. The emotional affair they had was like a drug. They built up a fantasy in their minds about how they were perfect for each other. In each other, they found a person who was sensitive and caring. The only difficulty, of course, was that they were both married. Stephanie decided to divorce her husband, Dale. She said it was based on him allegedly attacking their son. Whether he did or didn't do that, I think it's likely that Stephanie wanted to find a reason to get divorced. Her emotional infidelity was a strong motivator to end her marriage with Dale. Not long after Stephanie filed for divorce, Ron realized the emotional affair would never transform into a good relationship. He decided he would try to make things work with his wife, Cynthia. Stephanie was not ready to let go. It's not clear if Ron was ready to let go either, but he was probably not as committed to Stephanie as she was to him. On the night of November 22, 2010, Stephanie was on her computer writing a desperate love letter to Ron. Dale discovered what she was doing and rendered her unconscious by striking her. The state promoted the theory that Dale used Stephanie's laptop computer to strike her, but it really could have been just about any object or even his hands. Dale reacted in the heat of the moment. He didn't plan on committing the crime in advance. When he calmed down, he realized that he was in a lot of trouble. He drove his wife to the Blue River. At some point, he removed most of her clothing, probably because of its potential evidentiary value. He wanted to drown his wife in the river or kill her through hyperthermia, but she regained consciousness. Dale beat Stephanie with a rock and left her body in the river. He waited until the next morning to call the police to give himself time to clean up the crime scene. Dale did a good job getting rid of any evidence, but he did not count on his alleged history of violence being used against him. He also didn't understand how other people perceived his behavior, like not searching for his wife and making derisive comments about her. Dale's behavior was used against him, and he was convicted. Some people wonder why Stephanie would have written the email knowing that Dale was right there in the same house. If she was afraid of Dale, why not be more secretive or write the email some other time? Why did she think it was worth the risk to communicate with her lover at that very moment? I'm not sure if Stephanie was intensely afraid of Dale, although she should have been. I think that Stephanie was lost in a world of fantasy. She was trying to leave one bad partner for another bad partner. Dale, perhaps, had threatened her, and Ron was willing to cheat on his wife. Stephanie did not have any luck in selecting companions. She made a series of poor decisions. Dale appeared to have a few characteristics of narcissism and psychopathy. For example, he was manipulative, cold, callous, impulsive, and did not have empathy. With this in mind, Stephanie should have never underestimated Dale's willingness to be violent. Even in the midst of a confusing and passionate emotional affair, she would have been better served by remaining vigilant. Stephanie's strong emotions prevented her from guarding against a threat who was there the entire time and gave Dale the opportunity to surrender to his strong emotions. The problem was the difference in the emotions. Stephanie's emotions were romantic and Dale's were homicidal.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.